The middle of nowhere is truly a creepy place to be broken down on the side of the road. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back for another video. Today we're going to be sharing some creepy and allegedly true middle of nowhere horror stories sent in by viewers just like you. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp, and stories like yours that help keep this show going. Before we get into this video, I just have to take a quick moment to thank today's sponsor, BetterHelp. You know, sometimes life gets hard, especially during these trying times. And after a year like 2020, we could all use a little help. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours, and in most time, it's much quicker than that. It's not a crisis line, it's not self-help, it is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room ever again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Honestly, I've tried it out myself and I've really enjoyed it. It has helped me a lot. Visit betterhelp.com/swamped. That's betterhelp.com/swamped. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Swamp Dweller listeners, for an exclusive time, we'll get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/swamped. A few months back, one of my friends had opened up to me about a creature he said he encountered 2 times around New Jersey, where my mother lives. This same friend and I have encountered a skinwalker in the past while being in New Jersey, and he told me, when he was just a boy, he saw something in the fields next to his house out in the middle of nowhere. Whatever he saw still terrifies him to this day. He has had 2 encounters with this so-called creature, one in the middle of the day when he was a boy, and one while waking up in the middle of the night. Here are his encounters with an alleged dogman. These stories are also from his perspective, so I could capture the narrative. I hope you enjoy his stories. Hi, my name is Todd, and I have lived in New Jersey all of my life. Since I was a kid, I had all sorts of paranormal and creature experiences, which I can also tell here in the future at some point. I am a heavy believer in the supernatural, and in Dogman, and other cryptids, just like my friend Sam. Here are 2 of my encounters with what I believe are Dogman. It was a clear sunny day, as I was walking alongside a trail that was close to my house. I was only around 7 or 8 years old at the time. It was so beautiful out that day, and as a young kid, I was taking it all in. I was having an absolute adventure, picturing myself just running through the open fields waiting for my mom and dad to get home. The trail I was on has beautiful scenery all around, with tall grass for miles. To my left, there was a dense forest to my right. I just was walking through the woods, as whenever my parents were not home, I would just explore. I was enjoying the walk, taking in all the feels of the nature. The smell of the wood was intoxicating, as well as the chirping birds. Then the woods fell silent. I felt like someone or something was watching me, and my eyes darted around the entire area. I then looked to my left and noticed something in the tall grass. To me, it looked like a big dog, but then I saw that it was crouched down like a man would be if it were hiding. He was covered in brown fur. It looked like it had a muzzle and ears like a German shepherd, and had eyes that were blood red. I thought it was more curious than frightening at the moment, but I was still on edge. I was scared for a bit, but I acted like I did not notice it and just went along my day and ran back to my house. I never really spoke about this encounter with anyone of my family, as they would probably think that I was crazy, but that was my first encounter with what I think was a dog man. The second encounter only happened about 4 or 5 years ago, if my memory serves me correctly. At this point in time, I lived in a different house. The house was close to a large forest, and the biggest predators I have seen around here were either coyotes or foxes. Now, what I saw that night was no coyote. I woke up in the middle of the night with my throat dry and realized I was thirsty. I went to the kitchen to get some water when I felt the sudden sense of dread and felt like I was being watched. I investigated the window close to where I was, and to my shock and horror, I saw this huge animal in my backyard. Whatever it was had noticed me, and it was staring at me with these crimson red eyes. I felt utterly terrified, and to my horror, I saw the animal bare its teeth at me and stand up on two legs. This creature then started growling, and I could hear it as my window was open slightly. I also saw its breath come out of its mouth, and I realized this thing was a real animal. It looked to be about 7 or 8 feet tall on both legs, with the head of a German shepherd and a body shaped just like a bodybuilder. Whatever this thing was then looked at my fence in my yard, ran to it, and jumped across it into the woods below. I went back to my bed, terrified, and could not sleep for the rest of that night. These two encounters with these beings have shook me to the core and made me realize that there are creatures that science refuses to recognize out there. Be safe, be careful, and be sure to never explore the woods without being armed in some manner. Although what I'm about to tell you may sound like one of your run-of-the-mill horror movies, I swear the validity of it and what I saw. It all started on an extremely hot July day this past year. My car is almost 20 years old and sometimes overheats on hot days, just like this one. However, until I get a better paying job, it is the car I'm stuck with. This day I was driving through the back roads looking for a family of dog breeders a friend had told me about. I had been searching for the place for several hours and was approaching the warmest part of the day. As per usual, my car began overheating and I was forced to pull over. I picked up my phone to call my girlfriend only to see that my battery was dead. After I spent a couple of minutes cussing my luck, I acknowledged that I was going to have to find someone with a working phone. That was not going to be very easy, unfortunately, as I was out in the middle of nowhere. And, unfortunately, that was also not going to happen unless I started walking. Soon, I spotted an old farmhouse off in the distance and headed toward it. A trip that would have taken a half an hour on a normal day took almost an hour because of the oppressive heat. I had to take several breaks during the journey, but eventually made it. The area around the house looked more like a junkyard, parts of old cars spread about, and I had to weave through a maze of them to try to reach the front door. I knocked on the door for several minutes but got no answer. Thinking maybe that the homeowner may be hard of hearing, I walked around and investigated the windows, hoping to see someone inside. At the side of the house, I spotted a telephone hanging on the wall just inside the kitchen. Now that I knew there was a phone there, I became excited and started calling out for someone. Even after walking all the way around, no reply came. I was about to give up until I saw a woman laying on a bed. I nearly banged on the window to try to get her attention, but I figured that may scare her, so I went back to the front door and let myself in. In hindsight, that was just as scary. Before I entered, however, I took a piece of paper from a notebook I carry with me and wrote out a note explaining what I was doing there. Even then, I called out several times as I approached the bedroom. Still no answer. I continued toward the room. The closer I got to the woman, the more her appearance began to unnerve me. She was lying flat on her back and staring blankly at the ceiling. I had initially believed she was watching the television that was turned on in the room with her, but her eyes sat completely still. Regardless, I got closer, and once I was within a few steps, I handed her the note. When the note touched her hand, she did not react. This caused me to get closer, and this is when I realized something was very wrong. Her face had a very dry, almost mummified look to it. Her hair was a vibrant black, a color not often seen on older females. She had to have known I was there by that point, but her eyes stayed fixated. This is what caused me to lean in even closer and look into her eyes. Rather than being slightly bloodshot or moist-looking like most people's, they had a shiny, glassy appearance, like they were fake. Despite this, not until I touched her did I know for sure that she was dead. I realized that perhaps she was a mannequin rather than a human, so I reached down and touched her bare hand. The texture of her skin was dry, but stone cold to the touch. The oddity of this just beginning to really sink in when a loud creaking noise came from behind me. Without a second thought, I tore out of there and ran back down the road in the direction of my car. Within a half a mile, I ran into an older man in a truck, and he agreed to give me a ride into town. I said nothing about my experience to him, and any time he attempted to make small talk, I said as absolutely little as I could. He let me borrow his phone to call my girlfriend, and she agreed to meet us at a gas station on the edge of town. When he let me out there, I thanked him and he went on his way. Once I was safely inside my girlfriend's car, I borrowed her phone and called the police. I had not even told her about it yet, so the look of shock on her face as I described what I saw showed me what my expression likely was at the time when I discovered it. The cops said they would send a car out to the house to check out my claims. I called a wrecker next to pick up my car. The police never called me back, so after waiting 3 days, I called to inquire about what they found. It took a few moments to find a person aware of my call, but once I did, the officer said that he and his partner searched the entire property and found nothing out of the ordinary, especially not a mummified woman. I thanked them and hung up. What happened after I fled, I can only guess. The noise behind me was probably the owner of the home, and he hid the woman's body, knowing that the cops were likely to be called. To tell you the truth, I am not sure what I saw in that house on that bed. I am positive that I saw a human laying on the bed, but that is all. More than once I have been tempted to grab a camera and return to that house to get proof of my claims, but fear of the unknown and what else could be waiting for me if I did has stopped me. If the nightmares of her soulless eyes continue, however, I may have no other choice. I was hired to do a catalog shoot for a national company. The shoot was scheduled for August of 2014 in rural Montana. When the time came, I flew in and was driven to a quaint lodge in the mountains in which the shoot was based out of. I was introduced to the lady running the shoot from the company's side. We had worked together once or twice in the past, and I was happy to be working with her again. Her and I were soon joined by her assistant. The three of us spoke for a short time before I was shown to my accommodations. I arrived late in the day, so after eating a small dinner, I turned in for the day. The next morning, everyone involved with the shoot, maybe 12 people in total, met in a large hall for breakfast. Upon the completion of our meal, myself, the lady running the shoot, and her assistant got into a Jeep and went in search of shooting locations. The models and a couple of other people I do not remember followed us in another Jeep. After an hour or more of driving, I spotted a beautiful rocky outcropping, and we set things up. The lighting was fantastic that day. So extraordinary little extra work was needed to get the shots I was looking for. A few hours later, I was done with the location, and it was time for lunch anyway. The Jeep, with the models, returned to the lodge. However, my counterpart convinced me to check out a breathtaking area she had seen on a walk the day before. She said that she had arrived early in the morning and decided to take a walk before my plane landed. This sounded fine to me, and she insisted it was not that far away. We would be back for lunch soon after the others, no problem. After a 5-minute drive, we made it to the location. She led us about 100 yards down the trail, and it ended on a sheer ledge. No doubt it was a gorgeous spot, but I could see without the right light, the photos would not be able to do it justice. I mentioned this, and she walked closer to the edge to get a better look. She went out much further than I would have recommended. However, I guess she was a bit more occupied with her work than her safety. After taking one too many steps, the loose rock of the cliff broke free, causing her to tumble down the sheer cliff. Her assistant, this cute and kind little girl, rushed over, and if I had not stopped her, possibly would have followed her employer down the hill. Instead, I had her get a strong hold on me, and I slowly and carefully scooted toward the remaining ledge. I took in a big breath and let it out, then looked over to see the poor woman curled up about 75 feet from us. She did not move at first, and I feared for the worst. However, the longer I stared at her, I could begin to see her body make small, almost indistinguishable movements. I let her assistant know this and asked if she could drive. She said yes. I told her to run back to the Jeep and get help. Quicker than lightning, she ran down the trail, and a moment later, I could see the Jeep flying down the road in the direction of the lodge. Even if she was unable to respond, I wanted her to know help was on the way. I yelled down to her and could only hope she could hear what I was saying. Minutes seemed to drag on, but within half an hour, a rescue team arrived to help. The two men lowered down with a special stretcher. They attached her to it. Once she was raised back up to the top, it was clear she was severely injured, but still alive. An ambulance took her away, and all that was left was the waiting. The shoot was obviously on hold until a decision was made on how to proceed. It was ultimately decided to cancel, at least for the foreseeable future, and that was the end of my part in that awful mess. I received no news for a few months, but then I got a call from her. The last 9 weeks had been a near nightmare for herself and her family. The initial swelling on her brain was so bad, she was put into a coma. This would eventually pass, but the long hours of being stuck in bed almost drove her crazy. The list of broken bones in her body went well into the double digits, and even at the time we were speaking, she was still walking on crutches. Over the years since this incident, her and I have kept contact every so often. At the time of me writing this, she has had 5 surgeries on various bones and parts of her body, and will no doubt have several more before she dies. Despite the awful violence of the fall and the long, agonizing convalescence she has suffered through, she still has not lost her sense of humor. On our last call, just a week ago, she said if she could do it all over again, she might pick a shorter distance to fall from. A true heroine, if I've ever seen one. This had to have happened sometime in the early 2000s. My husband was still spending most of his time on the road working for one of the major insurance companies. As a result of this, myself and our young daughter spent most of our days alone. A few years prior, we had purchased a new home on a somewhat isolated piece of land, and the journey between town and home could often be harrowing, especially at the times of heavy rain. Most of the last 5 miles of road that led to the house was nothing more than loose gravel, and not very wide for that matter. My daughter and I found we were stuck on this section of the road on a bad night. I did all that I could to keep our Subaru on the road, but the rain made visibility almost impossible. It was not long until I misjudged one curve and ended up in a ditch. Fortunately, my husband had the foresight to sign us up for one of those roadside assistance programs. I contacted them and was told that the weather was keeping them busy, but they would get to me as soon as they could. Not knowing how long we would be stuck there, I made my daughter as comfortable as I could and waited. The rain stopped soon after, and I was now able to see how far away from home we were. I estimated we were probably about 2.5 miles from the house, and considered walking, until I remembered no one was home to retrieve the car later. Help was on its way, so I guess I could wait. Within 10 minutes of the incident, I could see the headlights of a truck coming toward us and began to get excited. However, it did not turn out to be a tow truck. Instead, it was an older man driving a rusty pickup truck. When he saw the car, he slowed down and investigated as he passed. I thought he was about to offer to pull us out, but he continued down the road. I honestly did not think too much of it at the time. But 5 minutes later, the rusty truck approached us coming from the other direction, at a terribly slow speed. He stared at me, once again as he passed, even making eye contact with me briefly, but never did he stop. Things were beginning to look odd, to say the least, but I thought maybe he was just lost and turning around to return to the highway. He was not in any way obligated to help me, of course. Perhaps he thought I was just parked instead of stuck. He probably was not from around there and was just trying to get home like I was. Things did not start to get scary until I noticed the same truck coming toward me for a third time. It had gotten completely dark by this point, and most women I know feel much less safe once the sun goes down. This situation made things look even more sketchy. He did his usual, by now, slow drive-by. What was different this time was that he stopped the truck after he passed and did a quick 3-point turn in the road. He was now facing us again, stopped about 10 yards away. Rather than get out and come over to offer aid, he sat in the cab and watched us for a few minutes. Only now did he open the door and begin to get out of the truck. Almost as soon as his foot hit the pavement, a pair of headlights appeared from the other direction. The man stayed where he was. He was just watching and waiting for a few minutes before it was close enough to see it was a wrecker. Once he saw this, he jumped back into his truck and made a U-turn and sped away from us. My heart was stuck in my throat as I watched this play out, and not until I could read the name of the company on the side of the tow truck could I begin to relax. The tow truck driver did not hesitate to pull his truck up in front of us and hook up my car. I was finally confident that he was there to help. I got out to thank him. He had us out of the ditch in a few minutes, and we were on our way. For the remainder of the journey, I kept my eyes open for the rusty truck, and even as I drove up our drive, I feared I would see him, waiting for me somewhere. He was not, happily, and I got my daughter into the house for the night. When my husband returned from his latest trip, I told him about what had happened during the last storm, but I left out the part with the strange truck. I knew it would only make him more stressed when he was away, and at that time, he had no other choice but continue his trips. Because of this latest trouble, though, he went out and purchased an almost brand new Jeep with a 4x4 transmission for me. I was over the moon to get it, and I never got stuck again, even when the muddy parts of our property got really bad. It did not take long for the stranger and the rusty truck to pass from my mind. However, for the next 2 weeks, I caught myself looking for it any time I was on that stretch of road. I had almost completely forgotten about the incident until just recently, when I saw a truck like that at the store. It was of course not the same one, but it caused it all to come flooding back and motivated me to send this into your show. Fortunately, in the preceding years since then, the county has paved and widened the roads, and my wonderful husband gets to come home to us every night. I started my career working in sawmills back in 2007. I was hired for a portable sawmill in southwest Washington state. This mill was located quite literally in the middle of a forest. It was constructed in the early 1970s, and even in the short 30 years of its life, it seemed to have a decent amount of history inside of it. I worked the weekend graveyard shift, 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 a.m. the following day, on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. I was a trim drop operator. I had a partner who I was with. We were the only two who worked in this area. His name is Pete. We would take turns rotating through the night. One of us would run the drop, where you would drop out bad boards, chunks of garbage, and just anything else that could not be made into quality lumber. The boards that would be left to be processed would enter a lugged, chained system, and then be pulled through a scanner, and then a trim box that would cut the lumber to length, and then take them to the next area, which was the sorter. The other of us would sit at an operator's console about 20 feet away and watch monitors that displayed various parts of the machine and process flow. We rotate every few thousand boards to keep from being fatigued. One night, I was running the drop, and Pete was kicked back at the console station reading away at the newspaper. Everything was just going normal as ever, when I glanced over and noticed him peering up at the monitor for the outfeed with a puzzled look on his face. He jumped up and went walking down to the trimmer saw box and looked around it. He also looked at the outfeed. He then walked back, looking quite concerned, sat down, shrugged, and started reading again. This happened a second time, and by now it had my attention. I threw up the skids to stop the flow of lumber and walked over to him and asked him what was up. There was a guy standing at the outfeed. I went down there to see what the hell was going on, and when I got there, he was gone, he said, with a confused look on his face. This did not make sense, because this was an area that was not accessible unless you stopped the machine and activate a catwalk that unfolded from the outfeed of the saw to allow access to a small platform on the opposite side of the machine as we operate it from. I asked him to point out where the guy was hanging. Pete pointed to the platform, slightly frustrated. I shook my head at him and laughed, before running back to the drop to continue running lumber. Pete stayed fixed on the monitors now, newspaper folded up and thrown to the side. No more than 5 minutes go by before he jumps up and runs down to the saw box and outfeed again. This time, I threw the skids up and followed him. By the time we got there, there was nothing. He pointed across the lumber table, which was 30 feet wide, to the platform across the machine and yells, "Who's over there? You aren't allowed to be over here, god dang it!" Both of us waited to see a man who had been on the monitor, but once again, there was nothing there. After a minute or two of looking, we decided to move back to our stations. I walked by the console station, glancing at the monitor, seeing nothing, and Pete followed shortly behind. By the time I made it to the drop to start running again, Pete howled. I snapped over and saw him stabbing the monitor with his finger. He yelled at me to come look. I ran over and investigated the monitor. Sure enough, there was a guy. He was standing on the small platform Pete had pointed out. The monitor is small, grainy, and black and white, but we can work out that this guy is wearing a tin hard hat, a very dirty and worn button-up long sleeve with the sleeves either rolled up or ripped off, and a very thick denim jeans of a dark color. He is just standing there, with his elbows on the handrail, looking at the lumber from the saw box. "Wait here," Pete yelled as he stealthily snuck down to the outfeed. As he closed in on the outfeed area, to catch this guy red-handed for being in an area you cannot or should not be able to access while in operation, I looked back and forth at Pete and the monitor. About the time Pete made it to the saw box, the man on the monitor looked up into the camera and literally just faded away. I completely lost my cool. I felt a cold chill run down my back, accompanied by all the hairs on my arms standing up. I sprinted as quickly as I could to Pete, exclaiming, "That ain't a guy. It's no guy." Pete just stood there dumbfounded. Both of us knew that we were looking at an empty platform, and we had no idea what we should do. We were quite disturbed now. Pete crossed his arms and thought, before deciding we should call our foreman down to tell him this story. We walked back to the operator's station and Pete grabbed the mic of the radio and called for the foreman. We ran operations until he arrived, both of us ready to bolt for the saw box in case we saw the entity again. The foreman showed up about 5 minutes or so later and we stopped running and explained what had happened. The foreman did not look impressed, but he was smiling. He explained that we had probably just seen one of the old-timers. Back in the late 70s, we had a man who worked here who ran the chip bin station, and one day, arrogance got the best of him. Long story short, he got buried in a chip pile and was crushed and suffocated before he could get dug out. As homage to his previous career as a logger in the woods, people think that his ghost roams these halls. Other operators have had occurrences where they have witnessed this entity wandering around different machines, seemingly just watching the flow of lumber. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true middle-of-nowhere horror stories. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's from the middle of nowhere or something else, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I am always looking for new stories to share, and I would love to share yours with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going on a daily basis. If you enjoyed this selection of stories, be sure to hit that like button. It helps me out a ton. The more likes this video gets, the more YouTube promotes it in the algorithm. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us and help the waters of the swamp expand even more? Hit that subscribe button. Be sure to turn on notifications so you don't miss a new video. I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you're on the go, and you don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories, you can do so by downloading them absolutely free from iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, and just about everywhere else you listen to your favorite podcast online. If you're on iTunes, do me a quick favor and give us a 5-star rating, as that helps me out a ton. If you want to support the Swamp outside of hitting that like button and subscribing, maybe check out the merch store. I've got t-shirts, face masks, hoodies, mugs, and much more. I've got an exclusive Christmas design right now that'll only be printed until the new year, so get one before it's all gone. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I couldn't do this on a daily basis without you guys. I'd love to know in the comments down below what story tonight was your absolute favorite. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.